Dozier cranks it into the corner, straight out. It is fair. And the Royals get three back in the bottom of the seventh inning. That's Dozier's second extra base hit tonight.
And Hunter Dozier with the three-run homer, but it wasn't enough. The Royals lose to the Indians last night at home by a final score of 8-6. Royals led 1-0 and 3-1, but could not hold on to it. 2 in the 5th for Cleveland, 5 in the 7th off of Jake Junis with a couple of homers. Junis going to the bullpen as Daniel Lynch got his major league debut. Went 4 2/3, 4 hits, 3 runs, 4 walks, 3 Ks. And decent stuff, and Mike Matheny actually was pretty happy with his poise because a lot of things went against Lynch last night.
He had stress just about every inning. He had guys on base and umpires calling balks on him, and just stuff that he was having to deal with that he was able to manage exceptionally well. And I thought he just had great poise, thought that he just pitched great. That was exactly what we were hoping for. He made some good pitches in the middle of their order. They got some guys that can do some damage. He was smart at times and not giving in. And that was part of the game plan, too, is know when we can try to spread the zone. Then getting ground balls when he needed us to. And it was just a very good first outing.
So the Royals lose, and they have a one-game lead in the division over the White Sox. Royals now 16-11, no longer have the best record in Major League Baseball. They've now lost 3 of their last 4 and 2 in a row. Royals back in action. Mike Minor on the hill, 2-1, ERA 5.26, 7-10 tonight. Royals with a 2-game lead over the Indians, and Cleveland will be in KC again for tonight's second game, and then there'll be a third game tomorrow and a fourth game on Thursday. A 4-game set between the Royals and Cleveland, but not a good night for the boys in blue last night, losing 8-6. Local sports, we hand it off to Dusty.
Yes, results from yesterday, the baseball games in Minneapolis. Minneapolis winning over Lincoln, Sylvan Lucas, and 3 in both games. They won the first game 15-0 and took game 2 18-0 there yesterday. Also, as Lincoln Sylvan Lucas now 3-9 in the season, Minneapolis is 10-6. Also, Sacred Heart getting a sweep over TMP in baseball, 2-1 and 2-0 were the scores in those games. In softball, Minneapolis and Sylvan Lucas Lincoln splitting their doubleheader there. Minneapolis won the first game 7-3. Sylvan Lucas Lincoln winning 18-7 in the second game. Bloody Mustangs are now 11-7 as Minneapolis is 5-13 on the season. And then in boys golf yesterday, Beloit was competing at the Southeast Saline Invitational. No real top finishes for the Trojans as far as the winner team-wise. Heston took the team title, and then individually freshman Dylan Esch from Southeast Saline took first place, and you can find full results at ncksports.com. Coming up today in high school sports, baseball and softball, Concordia is at Marysville in doubleheader action, both of those beginning at 4:30 this afternoon, and also Ellsworth is at Southeast Saline. And track and field today, Minneapolis Invitational at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Beloit, St. John's, and Concordia competing there. Logan Invitational at 3 o'clock with Lakeside and Thunder Ridge. At 3 o'clock this afternoon, the Tescott Invitational as well. Tipton, Rock Hills, Sylvan Lucas, Lincoln, and Pine Valley competing from the area. And Smith Center at the Oakland Invitational this afternoon. They're in Northwest Kansas at 3 o'clock here today as well. High school golf, Lakeside Invitational is at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Lakeside, St. John's, Tipton, Rock Hills, Sylvan Lucas, and Pike Valley are competing from the area. And also the Marysville Invitational is going on this afternoon at 1 o'clock, which Concordia will be competing in. So those are the local athletes and teams that are competing here today as far as our local schedule is concerned. For all the latest in local sports, you can always check out ncksports.com as we have results from the NCK Raptors mountain biking last weekend as well. And all of that info is right there at your fingertips. Again, ncksports.com.
All right, KU introducing our new head football coach yesterday at a press conference. He is 56 years of age. He will have a 6-year, $16.5 million contract, $2.2 million his first year, which is the lowest paid coach in the Big 12. That salary can grow to $3.3 million if he's still the coach in 2026. But if he's doing a really good job, they'll add an extension, and he'll probably make even more money than that. So Coach Leipold, the new coach at Kansas University, talks about the goal. What is the goal?
The goal is to win championships, pure and simple, one day at a time. Become a consistent winner, attention to detail, do it with great energy, passion, and effort. It's not overly complicated, and it's going to take some work. And we started some of those processes now, and we'll continue as soon as we complete this press conference today.
And what about the staff? What kind of staff is he going to put together?
As we put this staff together, I want to make sure we know this isn't for one season. We are going to put together a staff with the future back to the word about continuity and consistency. So as we look at putting our staff together, it's not just to get us through season one. That happens sometimes in college football. Part of the success is having consistency in the room and day in and day out for our student athletes. So as I evaluate the situation, that's going to be first and foremost.
Leipold said he expects to be a KU for a very long time. Well, that depends on if he's successful or not. And he's not a guy that likes to move around a lot. He was at Wisconsin, Whitewater, and 3 national championships, 109 wins, 6 losses. That's pretty good. And then Buffalo, he had a winning record and did just fine there. So now he moves up to, with the big boys, Power 5 in the Big 12, with the worst program in, some people think, in all of America. And that's KU football. So he does have his challenges in front of him to deal with, but he wouldn't have taken the job otherwise. I mean, he knows what's going on. 7 Buffalo assistant coaches expected to join Leipold at Kansas. Their specific roles still to be determined, as you can imagine. And so KU has their new head coach. We'll see how it all works out. I like it a lot more than their last 3 hires. First of all, I was okay with the Turner Gill hire, but then, you know, Charlie Weiss was a train wreck. We knew that when he was hired. It was a joke. Embarrassing, and turned out to be absolute train wreck. A disaster. Then David Beatty came in. Not a lot of people wanted the job. David Beatty came in, inherited a mess, did as good as he could with what he had, with no head coaching experience prior. And then Les Miles and Jeff Long fiasco, as we know now. Not everything thoroughly vetted with that situation. And now you get Lance Leipold. And considering all of the mistakes that KU football has made in regards to hires and wasting money and paying buyouts to coaches left and right, and they really have had no success since Mark Mangino was fired. The fact that they had guys that are interested in this job that are highly thought of and some up-and-coming coaches, and they got Lance Leipold, I think is very encouraging if you're a KU football fan, and I don't think there's too many of them out there. But trust me, if they start winning, they'll come out of the woodwork, just like they in 2008 when Kansas won the Orange Bowl, went 12-1, and suddenly KU had tradition in football. It was a tradition power. No, you're not. My son goes, well, you can't win at Kansas in football. I said, son, you were 2 when they went to the Orange Bowl, went 12-1. If Mark Mangino, listen, if Bill Snyder can do what he did at Kansas State, Mark Mangino can do what he did at KU, then there is somebody that can get KU back to respectability. Now, I said, I don't know about 12-1 in Orange Bowl again, because the dynamics and environment landscape has changed. However, I do think that there's a coach out there at some point before I die that will be able to get KU back to 9, maybe even 10 wins.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think they're going to necessarily maybe compete for Big 12 championships, but I don't really see Kansas ever getting back to a season where they went 12-1. But, you know, a lot of people didn't think that ever happened before Mark Mangino did it. But then you had the unbalanced schedule. Now you got to play everybody in the Big 12. It is very interesting to see what Leipold can do, because I think he's going to build it the right way. I think, obviously, he's got AD, who's making his first coaching hire at KU. Both are going to be given time by the higher-ups at Kansas unless they totally mess up and violate things and break rules. So you – and that's one of the things I think was intriguing about the job, too, is coming in without a lame duck AD. Like, if Jeff Long was the AD, that would have been tougher to hire a guy, believe it or not. But Travis Goff coming in, clean slate – you know, hey, he's going to be here as the AD for probably at least 3, 4, 5 years. So I'm probably going to at least have 3, 4, 5 years to get this turned around and be respectable. And let's be honest, there's nowhere to go but up when it comes to Kansas football. So Lance Leipold's a new guy, and I think it's a good hire. But then again, it doesn't matter what we think right now. It's a matter of him putting it together. What are the realistic expectations at KU? So seriously, what are the realistic expectations at KU for football? So let me give you this. He has a 6-year deal. What do you think is realistic 6 years of records? Okay, so let's start with year one, his first year next year. What do you think Kansas's record realistically, or the expectations, should be? To me, they should be very low.
I think one or two wins, honestly. I mean, after...
I'm going to say two wins.
Yeah.
Two wins. That would be my hope or expectation in year one.
Yeah.
Year two?
I mean, you get to four, maybe. Three or four.
Year two, four. Year three, I'll say five.
Competing for bowl eligibility by year three.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Year four, about 500, 6-6.
Yeah.
Where do you expect more now?
I mean, it's still Kansas, right?
Right.
So you're still working.
Yes. I think you're going to need
realistic expectations is what we're talking
about.
That's
what I'm talking about. Realistic. So we're in agreement. Two wins first year, realistic. Four wins second year, I'd say three or four, realistic.
Yeah.
Year three, five wins, you know, four or five, somewhere in that range. And I think year five, you should be winning at least five games. Or year four, excuse me. You should be winning five games, maybe six. You should be fighting bowl eligibility probably by year three or four. I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then year five is when he should be having a winning record. I think that's realistic. You go 7-5 in year five.
Yeah.
Now, what could happen is he could win one game his first year, win five his second year, then win four, then shoot up to seven, then back to six. I mean, it could be all over, and that's okay. That's okay. But realistically, expectations, I think you and I are in total agreement that really, first 2 years, you can't expect bowl eligibility. You got to think year three, maybe four, bowl eligibility. And by the way, you can have a losing record and be bowl eligible. We'll stress that again. 5-7 sometimes can fill a slot. And Kansas would die to go after that spot. Nebraska, not so much.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's all relative to where you're at.
Sure.
There's no
doubt
about
Nebraska
that,
should take a bowl game the way they've been going.
Yeah, Nebraska's not in a great situation that way either. So, yeah, they should take what they get right now and then, again, continue to improve. But I think that's every team's goal is you got to take those steps to get to where you want to be. And right now, I know he says the goal is championships, and every coach is going to say that. But
you have to say that, don't you?
You know, the realistic goal right now is bowl games for Kansas. I mean, that's the first step, right?
Right.
And it's not this year. It's not next year. It's building up to that.
Well, let me give you an example, because the last successful Kansas head football coach was Mark Mangino.
Yeah.
Mark Mangino's first 5 years. Are you ready? Two wins, 2-10. Year two, he went 6-7 and went to a bowl game. Year three, fell back, 4-7, no bowl game. Year four, shot back, 7-5, won the Fort Worth Bowl, went to a bowl game. Year five, 6-6, no bowl game. Year six, 12-1 Orange Bowl. Okay, that was the 07 season, but the 08 Orange Bowl in January. And then in 08, 8-5, still did just fine. And then they started 5-0 in 09, and then he became a big bully, apparently, because out of nowhere he was a bully. And they lost 7 in a row, and he still finished his career at KU with a winning record of 50-48, despite his first year being 2-10. So he went 2, then a shot up to 6, and a loss in a bowl game, then retreated to 4, then back to 7, then 6, then the aberration, 12. And he had Todd Reesing and Desmond Briscoe, Jake Sharp. I mean, he had some studs. He had Aqib Talib. He had some NBA, NFL
Myers
players.
On that team.
Kerry Meyer, he had NFL players. He had a few. Nick Reed. And then in 08, they won 8. And then 09, 5. Listen, the two, honestly, Mark Mangino had the really bad first year, which, you know, could be expected, 2-10.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had the really great year at 12-1. You erase those 2 years, okay, the high and the low. He was a coach that was 36-37, 500 at KU. You know, if you can get a coach to come to Kansas right now, the way the state of that program is, and you can get a coach that over the – if Lance Leipold over the next 6 years has an overall record near 500, that's a good hire.
Oh, yeah.
A really good hire. Now, for other programs, it's horrible. But for Kansas, it would be fantastic. So Mark Mangino, let's be honest, he had 5 of his 8 seasons, they won 5 or more games. He had a 2-10. I kind of kicked out to the curb his first year, getting things lined up. He had a 4-7, retreated in year 3. And, of course, he had the big-time year, 12-1, when KU actually was ranked second in the country and nearly had a chance to play for a national championship, believe it or not. Young people out there, like my son, don't know that. Because they were infants when that was taking place. So it can be done, but the landscape is different. But I do think that KU fans are expecting him to take him to the Orange Bowl and go 12-1 and be number two in the country at some point. I think that's unrealistic. I don't care what year it is. But at the same time, if you would have said when Bill Snyder was hired in 1989, what were the expectations of Bill Snyder in Kansas State? It was just win a few games. Just quit embarrassing us. Somehow make us respectable. Mm-hmm. And if you would have said that Bill Snyder is going to take K-State football within a whisker of a national championship game appearance, if not for Texas A&M in St. Louis, and who knows what else would have been done differently in that game, of course. Michael Bishop not fumbling, not knowing, you know, if they didn't reveal who, you know, what took place with UCLA, so forth and so on. Sir Parker, we can come up with lots of things. But the bottom line is Kansas State went from absolute rags to riches from the standpoint of almost having their program being eliminated before Bill Snyder got there to being Big 12 champions multiple times and going to multiple bowl games, winning 10 games many times, and they had a Heisman Trophy candidate, a couple of them, and they were one Big 12 championship game victory away from playing in the national championship. Would have anybody have predicted or expected that when Bill Snyder was hired? The answer is absolutely not. So the point and the reason I'm bringing this up is not to compare Kansas State and Kansas, but there are a little bit of similarities from the standpoint of Kansas. The last decade of Kansas football record-wise is just as bad or worse than K-State's horrible times, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And the landscape is a lot more difficult to retool, rebuild in a program than it was when Bill Snyder was at Kansas State. However, KU has better facilities, and they have more backing financially than Bill Snyder ever did when he first hired K-State. So it is dangerous to compare the two. But here's where I do think you can compare, is that Kansas State, their expectations were extremely low, and nobody would ever thought that Bill Snyder would get them to, you know, one a whisker away from a national championship game. Nobody right now expects Lance Leipold to take KU to be number two in the country or have Heisman Trophy candidates, be competing for Big 12 championships or winning two Big 12 championships as Bill Snyder did. Was Bill win two or three Big 12 championships?
He won two.
Two, yeah, that's what I thought. And no one's expecting Lance Leipold to have KU ranked number one in the country like Bill Snyder had multiple times at Kansas State. But what I'm saying is nobody expected that Bill Snyder either.
No.
Lance Leipold could maybe year five or six do what Mark Mangino did. Maybe they could be 12-1. Maybe they could be second in the country. Maybe they are in the Big 12 championship game. Maybe all of that's on the table. But realistically, it isn't. So I don't want to say there is no limit to the ceiling when anybody takes any job. At Kansas, many people believe there is a limit to what you can do in the Big 12. But then again, you know what? Baylor was a train wreck. They just became the national champions in college basketball. Mm-hmm. Remember the murder and everything and Dave Bliss and the horrible stuff that was happening down at Baylor? Did anybody think that so many years later they win a national championship? No, of course not. Did anybody think Scott Drew would be a national championship winning coach? Of course not. Did anybody think Bill Snyder was going to take K-State to within a whisker of a national championship game? Of course not. So we don't know. And to say that KU can't get back to where they were for 1 year under Mark Mangino is honestly not knowing your history. Mm-hmm. Is the landscape different? Yeah, but you can adapt and adjust. And I will say about Lance Leipold is that he has been successful wherever he has been at different levels of college football. The man knows how to coach. Mm-hmm. The question's going to be, honestly, to me, it's not about coaching. It's about recruiting. Can he recruit some really good players to fit what he wants to run at the University of Kansas? Can he get guys like Aqib Talib? Can he get a quarterback like Todd Reesing, who was not an NFL quarterback, but a really good college quarterback? Mm-hmm. Can he get a Desmond Briscoe? Can he get a state kids like Jake Sharp and Kerry Meyer and Nick Reed? You know, can he get those types of guys? Or will he lose out to K-State every time to Chris Klieman now? Or will he not get the Desmond Briscoe because he's going to get Oklahoma or Texas schools and the SEC? It's now they got schools in A&M, of course, in Texas. That was not the case back in 2008 when A&M was part of the Big 12. So it is a different landscape, but you can adapt and you can be successful. And here's the thing. I think Kansas finally found a guy that can build a program.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. I mean, he's going to take the steps that it requires to get there, right? He's not going to...
I don't think he's going to shortcut.
This isn't a, you know, Les Miles type deal where let's go find guys that know me and I'm going to go get five-star recruits, but I'm not going to build around those guys, right? Like, right. I'm not going to take the steps that it takes to get to where you need to get. And so that's not... Lance Leipold's not that guy. I mean, I just a little bit about what you're getting to know about him is he understands what it takes to build a program and to win, right? Yeah. And to not be impatient with that. And I know that it's maybe hard to say that to the real KU football fans, right? They want to win and they want to get back and do what they did in 2007 and then 2008 in the Orange Bowl. And so I know you want to get there quick, but it takes time. And I, like you said, I feel like Goff and Leipold are going to get that time if they continue to show that improvement. You know, they can't, you know, win five in year one and then win three and then two. I mean, obviously, if things go the wrong way, right, then they're not going to get the time. But,
right.
But if they do things the right way and if they see that progression, then obviously they will have time at KU to do those things and build the program.
Baylor football was absolute train wreck.
Oh, yeah.
There for a while. I mean, that was the one game KU could win. Baylor was horrible. Mm-hmm. And then Baylor ended up being, you know, obviously having a ton of success in college football and had a Heisman Trophy candidate in RG3. So if it can be done at Baylor for men's basketball and football, why can't Kansas do it? Of course they can. Kansas has proven they've done it before.
Yeah.
It's just the landscape's a little bit different. So I'm not going to limit what Lance Leipold can do at Kansas. Now, the key word we've been saying is realistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was not realistic to expect Bill Snyder to take K-State to multiple 10-win seasons and to be a whisker away from a national championship game appearance and win two Big 12 championships. That was not realistic when he was hired.
No.
It became more realistic as he built the program.
And
that's the same thing. That's, of course, what KU's hoping happens with Lance Leipold. All right, NBA last night, Russell Westbrook does it again. Man, this guy's playing well.
Westbrook, the lob, Gafford, the dunk, and there is a franchise-tying 24th assist by Russell Westbrook.
Russell Westbrook posted the 178th triple-double of his career, three behind Oscar Robertson's NBA record of 181. Here was his stat line last night. Remember, he's a 6'3 guard, point guard. 14 points, 21 rebounds, and 24 assists. Yep, you heard me correctly. It is just the third time in NBA history anyone's had recorded a 10, 20, and 20 game, and Westbrook is responsible for two of those three. You know who has the other one?
Wilt
Chamberlain.
I saw that last night.
22 points, 25 rebounds, 21 assists against Detroit in February 1968. For the season, Westbrook's averaging 22 points, 11.3 rebounds, 11.2 assists, and here's something interesting. With seven games to play, and if he gets triple-doubles in four of the seven, he'll break Oscar's all-time record, by the way, and I would say he will. With seven games to play, Westbrook could go out and have zeros. For the next seven games, mm-hmm. he could have 0 points, zero rebounds, zero assists, and he's still averaging triple-double for the season. And he's not barely averaging triple-double. It's not like he's 10.2 where he's hanging on. He's averaging 22 points, 11.3 rebounds, and 11.2 assists. He's averaging over 11 rebounds and assists. He's not hanging by a thread to stay at 10.0, waffling to 9.9.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets no mention for MVP. Now, you may say to yourself, if you follow the NBA, Wade, come on, man. Are you seriously going to bring up Russell Westbrook for MVP? I mean, that's ridiculous. The Wizards, I mean, they're right now, the Wizards in the standings right now, the Wizards, Wade. Come on, Wade, what are you thinking? Russell Westbrook's on a team that has a losing record. I mean, Russell Westbrook is on a team that might barely make the play-in tournament. You know I always have a counter to arguments. If Steph Curry can still be considered for MVP, why can't Russell Westbrook? Mm-hmm. You know what the Warriors' record is right now? It's only one game over 500. Until last night, they were a 500 team. The Wizards are 30 and 35. There's only a couple games difference
mm-hmm.
in regards to standings if they're in the same conference. Right now, the Warriors, before last night, were the number 9 seed. The Wizards are the 10 seed. So you're going to sit here and tell me that because you just enjoy Steph Curry more than Russell Westbrook, Curry's more deserving of MVP talk than Russell Westbrook? Steph Curry doesn't average triple-doubles. I'm just saying, if you want to be fair in your argument and you want to sit here, if somebody wants to tell me that Russell Westbrook shouldn't be considered for MVP at all, and I'm not saying he should be the MVP, okay? Understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He should be mentioned. That's all I'm saying. He should be mentioned. They started off horribly this year, the Wizards. He's part of a new team. They're now 8-2 in the last 10 games. They're playing good ball towards the end of the year, and Russell Westbrook has elevated his game to another level at the age of 32. And the Wizards right now are in the 10 spot. They're a half game out of the 9 spot in the East, and the Warriors right now are only a half game ahead of the 9 spot. They're in similar positions in their conferences. The Warriors have a couple more wins. That's it. And we get all enamored by Steph Curry. He makes all these threes. He's averaging 31 points a game and da-da-da. Yeah, but he's not pulling down 24 rebounds, 24 assists. So who's the more complete player? I mean, honestly, who's the more complete player? I'm going to tell you something right now. This is going to be very unpopular, and I love Steph Curry. But the more complete player is Russell Westbrook.
Oh, yeah.
He's a better
NBA, you know that.
You should know that.
Yeah.
He's a better defender. I think Curry could average 10, 11 assists a game if he wanted to. But Curry's not.
Well, and with different guys on his team, his assist numbers are higher than what they are this year.
Right.
I feel
But in past years, he ain't averaging 10, 11 assists a game.
And
he had a lot of weapons when he won championships. But he's a scorer, you know. Westbrook can be a scorer. He can be a rebounder. He can be an assist man. He can set up his teammates. Russell Westbrook has a ball in his hands probably even more so than Steph Curry, although Curry has it in his hands a lot now. Now, the one thing that Curry is a much better, obviously, and he's better than anybody that's ever played the game, he's way better of a perimeter shooter than Russell Westbrook. That's true. But Russell Westbrook is way better rebounder. He's a better defender. And you could sit here and say, well, I don't know, Westbrook's a better passer. Well, he apparently sets up his teammates on a worse team with more assists, way more than Steph has. So, you know, if you really want to play the argument and say, well, this is hilarious, you're mentioning Russell Westbrook as MVP, and then in the same breath you mentioned Steph Curry should be mentioned, then you're a bit of a hypocrite because you're not really looking at the big picture here. If you're going to be all poo-pooing Russell Westbrook for getting any kind of mention for MVP, then you better not be arguing for Steph Curry.
No.
Steph Curry's breaking three-point records
while
Russell Westbrook is breaking triple-double records.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking the likes of Oscar Robertson. And you could argue too. Some people could say, "Well, he's on a bad team; he can stat stuff himself." Well, yeah, but he also is on a bad team and still averaging 11 assists. I saw one game where he set up a guy for three straight layups and he missed every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's three lost assists on his stat line. So you could count. You could argue either way. You could say, "Well, he's filling his stats because he's on a bad team," or you could say that despite being on a bad team, he's still averaging 11 assists. He should average 13 a game. And trust me, if you watch the team, he probably should. He's got Bradley Beal, and now they're in playoff contention, by the way. He has got them right back in the playoff contention. The Wizards were going to be in the play-in tournament. They're up three games on the Raptors with seven to play. They're going to be in the play-in tournament, and the Warriors right now are going to be in too because they got a big win over the Pelicans last night. Don't you think that's fair, though? If you're going to mention Steph Curry, don't you have to mention Russell Westbrook as MVP candidate?
Hey,
because I think they both should be mentioned. That's not a shot at Steph Curry at all.
No.
I think Curry should be mentioned with what he's doing. I'm just saying Russell Westbrook should get a little more credit, too.
My thing has always been, I don't understand how they go about it. When
first year, he averaged a triple-double. Like, he had to be MVP.
How do you go about determining who's the MVP candidate, right?
It's like whatever's in flavor.
Yeah, because there was a big argument that year when he won it, right? Because it's like, oh, he's got to win MVP because
he averaged a triple-double.
But there were two guys that I felt were just as worthy and maybe should have got it because they had better numbers on better teams, right?
Harden was one
and
of
so
them.
And so James Harden and Kawhi Leonard was the MVP that year.
Yeah,
right. I'll go to my grave saying that because James Harden said wins should count. Yeah, they should.
Yeah.
Spurs had the second most wins in the league that year.
Right.
And it's like the Thunder were the sixth best team in the West.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're counting that year, mm-hmm. his team finished 12 games above 500, sixth in the Western Conference. Mm-hmm. If you're counting that year and saying he absolutely has to be MVP because he averaged a triple-double, only one other person in the history of the league's done that.
Right.
Okay, but his team finished sixth, right? So what are we basing it on team performance? Are we basing it on individual performance? Or what are we basing it on?
Mm-hmm.
But then the next year he goes and averages another triple-double. Shouldn't he have been the MVP automatically again?
Listen, he's averaged a triple-double three of the last 4 years since the year he averaged a triple-double to get MVP, and he doesn't even get any credit for it
now. So now we don't even talk about it because he did it once, but he had to be the MVP because he averaged a triple-double. That was the talk there.
Right, right.
And it's just like, okay. If that's what you want to say, I guess. But, yeah, James Harden and Kawhi Leonard had very good cases that year to be above him. And this year would have been above him in the MVP race. They would have both won the MVP ahead of Russell Westbrook this year because he's already done the triple-double thing. He's already won the MVP based on the triple-double. And it's like, what are you basing it on? Like, what do you look at when you give this out? And that was – obviously, listen, I never that year said that what he accomplished wasn't a great accomplishment.
Right.
But then why do you go then the next year and then two more years now, including that you're just like, nah, he's not the MVP.
Right.
But he had to be the MVP because he won a triple-double.
What year was he the MVP?
16-17.
Okay, 16-17, they were second in their division. 17-18, triple-double, they had a better record.
But yeah, they were better that year.
And then the year after that, they won 49 games. That's when they added Paul George, and he didn't even get any mention for MVP.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it's interesting. And then his last year with the Thunder, well, no, that wouldn't have been last year. That would have been when he was with Houston. It is interesting. It is interesting. All I'm saying is he should be mentioned. I'm not saying
he should win the MVP. And I don't think any of us are saying that, right? But he's not even in the conversation.
No,
right
he's not.
It's like, why he does should he at have least be, to win it one year?
Right, I agree.
But he's not even. Nobody's even talking about him.
Yeah, I agree. It's the same thing when you argue about who should be the Cy Young Award winner. Is it wins or is it ERA? I mean, yeah. Jacob DeGrom is the best pitcher in the National League, and he should win it because his team can't score and he runs for him. But remember Zach Greinke?
Legit people that thought Zach Greinke should not have won the Cy Young.
Man, it's all about the wins. His run support was horrible. So that has to factor in as well. But listen, if you look in the MVP race, Embiid's got a shot. I think the Sixers are the best team in the East. Giannis has a shot. I think after two straight MVPs, they'll make sure he doesn't. I'll tell you what, Julius Randle, the Knicks should be mentioned. He's having a heck of a year. And the Knicks had their first winning season since 2013. Who saw that coming? They're the four seed in the East. So I think, Julius Randle should get plenty of ink for MVP consideration. In the West, Chris Paul, I think, should get consideration. How quickly they've gone, boom, shot up 46-18. Because to me, most valuable player should be most valuable player to a team. And if they shoot up and have that many more wins, that's a pretty big addition. Nikola Jokic of the Nuggets has a great chance to win it too. Paul George has had a really good year with the Clippers. He could get mentioned. Luka Doncic will be mentioned, but they're a six seed. But if you're going to consider Curry, you better consider Doncic. Lillard's having a good year like he always does, but I don't think he's going to get considered. To me, in the West, it's probably going to come down. And Jokic right now, I think, is the front runner from what I've been reading. Mm-hmm. In the East, Embiid, Harden had a chance until he got hurt. Mm-hmm. To me, it comes down to Embiid and Giannis. Jason Tatum is having a great year, but they're seventh seed. So how much do you value wins in seeding? Yeah. If you value wins in seeding, then it's got to be Embiid maybe getting it over Giannis and Julius Randle. Am I missing somebody? I'm sure I am, but.
Well, I mean, Jokic.
Well, I mentioned that. I'm talking.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Because there's only
yeah,
one.
Yeah, there's only
yeah,
one, right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, I think it's Jokic and Embiid that are probably the two that are.
Yeah.
I think the front runners right now, based on what I'm seeing and hearing.
Right. But. Kia, they have this deal, Kia MVP ladder, and right now they talking about. Jokic is number one for the MVP. Embiid is second. Giannis is third. And Chris Paul shot up to fourth with what he's done. And Luka Doncic's fifth. That's their rankings. Then Lillard, Curry, Randle, Gobert, and then Devin Booker. And then they got five more after that. LeBron still, which he's missed a ton of games. James Harden, Donovan Mitchell, Kyrie Irving, Jimmy Butler. Russell Westbrook isn't even mentioned in the top 15. Curry's seventh.
You're not putting Russell Westbrook ahead of LeBron. I mean, listen, LeBron's the best player in the league. We know that. But
right.
How many games he's missed this year?
Missed a lot.
I mean, you can't.
Yeah.
He's not legitimately in the MVP conversation.
He shouldn't be.
No.
And yet he should have won many more MVPs.
He should have, yeah.
So it kind of works both ways, doesn't it? So last night in the NBA, the games, the Magic beat the Pistons 119-112. But the Wizard game, this was regular four quarters basketball, no defense. The Wizards beat the Pacers 154-141. Westbrook, we mentioned, 14 points, 21 rebounds, 24 assists. Domantas Sabonis, 32 points, 19 rebounds. Remember, they used to be teammates on the Thunder. Mm-hmm. The Warriors, Steph Curry, 41 points last night, 8 3-pointers. They beat the Pelicans. Zion Williamson with 32. Big win for the Warriors. Pelicans probably going to be out of the play-in tournament now with that loss, 123-108. Trae Young, 21 points. Damian Lillard, 33, but it was Young and his team. The Hawks beating the Blazers, 123-114. The Sixers beat the Bulls, 106-94. The Knicks, Julius Randle, another 28. They beat the Grizz, 118-104. The Jazz, Rudy Gobert, 24 points, 15 rebounds. Beat Dusty Spurs, 110-99. Spurs are flatlining a little bit. And the Lakers did beat the Nuggets last night, and the Lakers needed to win one. Anthony Davis, 25 points, and Nikola Jokic with 32 points and 9 rebounds. So that's the games from last night. And looking at the standings, there's only 6 or 7 games to play in the NBA standings right now. The Celtics are still sitting as a 7 seed. The Hornets, 8. The Pacers, 9. The Wizards have a chance to jump the Pacers and maybe could even catch the Hornets for the 8 spot. There's still a chance. The Wizards playing good ball right now. And in the West, the Jazz now have a half-game lead over Phoenix, who was idle last night. Nuggets 4 back, Clippers 4 back, and Lakers are 10 back. The Lakers only have a 1-game lead over Portland for the play-ins in the play-in tournament. Portland's in the 7th spot. Lakers are in the 5. And LeBron, his ankle continues to bother him, and that is a major story in the NBA right now. If LeBron James is – and he's not going to be 100%. He said this the other day, and there's some stuff about LeBron. Listen, I like LeBron. I respect the you-know-what out of LeBron. I think he's the great – I think he is the greatest player of this generation. You know, I mean this generation. I mean the last, 20 years, okay, obviously. LeBron has been the best player, really, since he came in the league. He's, for the most part, pretty much been a top-5 player. And for most of this time, he's been the best player in the NBA. There's no doubt. And he has been durable. He had a groin injury a couple years ago. First year with the Lakers, missed some considerable time, and then they shut it down because they were going nowhere. But he is Mr. Durable. And he's getting up there. He's got a lot of wear and tear on the tires. There's no doubt. He keeps his body in tremendous shape. But he said the other day that he goes, I don't think I'll ever be 100% again. I don't think I'll ever be 100% again. I'm like, this is new news? Like, all the wear and tear you have, I bet he was never 100% 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Because of all the extra games he plays. When LeBron's teams don't just make the playoffs, they go to June and play the NBA Finals.
And how many when he was in the East, were long series, yes, like Eastern Conference Final Series that went a distance?
Yes. So think about how many seasons he's added to the seasons he's played. Mm-hmm. If you add in his postseason career, he is – added at least, probably at least 1 or 2 NBA seasons to his body. Mm-hmm. And eventually Father Time catches up to you. So when he sits here and says the other day, I don't think I'll ever be 100% again. Well, no, I've never thought you ever were for a long time. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, nobody is. Okay, you might get the 100% in the off season, okay, and heal up. And maybe that's what LeBron's saying, is I'll never heal up. And why would you? All the wear and tear on your body? I mean, there's no way. 15 years from now, LeBron's going to probably have knee replacement surgery for all we know. Okay? It happens when you get older. Wear and tear on the joints, arthritis, whatever. But the interesting thing is that he says, well, I'm not going to be 100% again. I remember Jamal Murray talking after the Nuggets won their series against the Jazz last year, and they asked about how's everybody feeling. He said, well, nobody's 100% this time of year. Everybody's got bumps and bruises, aches and pains and sprains. When you get to the playoffs, and even at this point in the NBA season, nobody's 100%.
No.
Nobody. So to sit here and say, well, I'm never going to be 100% again, well, duh. You know? The other thing is LeBron's come out now, and this is very interesting and convenient. LeBron has come out and criticized the play-in tournament format. Now, why didn't he criticize that before this season or last season? You know why he didn't? Because the Lakers were a 1 or 2 seed. But now the Lakers are on the verge of slipping to a 7 seed in a play-in tournament. And now LeBron wants to – and he had some choice words about it. He said, it's crap. I'm cleaning it up, by the way, about the play-in tournament and this and this. But he had no opinion on it whatsoever until the Lakers are almost in the play-in tournament. And here's a thought. Instead of ripping the league for that, maybe you should look at your teammates, because there is still enough talent on this Lakers team that they should not be in this spot.
No.
So that's a bunch of horse pucky. The other thing, too, is a very interesting article on CBSSports.com I thought was intriguing. And you and I have talked about how we don't really like the play-in tournament, so forth and so on. And we agree, honestly, with LeBron and Luka Doncic and the Mavericks, who, by the way, are also arguing and mad about it because they, too, could be in the play-in tournament. Mm-hmm. You don't see the 76ers and Nets whining about it, or the Jazz or the Suns, do you?
No.
Okay, of course. You don't care until it's in your backyard and you got to deal with it. It's like people in real life. They don't care about a robber in their neighborhood until the robber robs them. You know? They really don't. They don't care about what's happening to somebody else, but then all of a sudden it affects them, and then all of a sudden they really truly care. It's like, where you been? It's been going on for years. Yeah. What are you talking about? So that's just the way some people are. That's what LeBron's done. That's what Mark Cuban's done. That's what Luka Doncic has done with the Mavericks and Lakers, is suddenly they're near a play-in tournament, and they say it's a bunch of crap. Those are their words, all right? Oh, and you know what? Dusty and I agree that, you worked all season long, and you're clearly the 7th best team, well above the 8, or the 8 well above the 9, then – you shouldn't have to play extra games to get yourself in. We agree with that. However, what LeBron doesn't understand is that, and unless he wants to take less money, which I'm sure he doesn't,
that the NBA was hurting financially because of COVID-19. They added the play-in tournament to draw more interest to their game. It also gives other teams a chance to make the playoffs, a few more teams, and I know they already have plenty in, even with the 8 in each conference. I agree there's too many probably, but on the flip side of that, that prevents teams from tanking as much, because if you still have a chance to get in, less teams are going to tank. And that's been a problem in the NBA over the last 5 to 10 years. Teams tank to try to get the number one overall pick or a stud that's going to be in the draft. It happens from time to time. And so the NBA creates a little bit more motivation to say, hey, listen, you can get in. You got a better chance of making the playoffs. Your fan base is still involved, just like we talked about with the wild card in Major League Baseball, which some people said was a horrible idea. And now we find out later it was a great idea. But what the NBA really wants to do, or not wants to do, but what needs to do, and this is a very good point in the article, LeBron, all those years in the East, his team was the best team. He didn't have to deal with, you know, multiple Western Conference powers, okay? Yeah. So they could cruise through some things. And it was not, he says it's not fair, the play-in tournament. Well, it wasn't fair that he was in the weak conference all those years either. It wasn't fair that he was in the inferior conference. It wasn't fair that teams in the West would have to play through 3 championship caliber teams to get to the Cavaliers in the NBA Finals. So if you're all about fairness, you're all about fairness. Now suddenly your current year in the NBA, which is number 16 or 17 in the league, now you're complaining about unfairness. I'll tell you, you know what's unfair is when you get a whole bunch of calls that go your way when you travel and get away with it. All right. When you run people over and it's not a charge. All right. That's unfair. So, listen, I respect LeBron. I think he is one of the 2 or 3 greatest players of all time. Maybe when his career is done, I'll even say he's the greatest of all time. I reserve the opportunity to say that because he hasn't finished his career. Until his career is over, I think it is silly and somewhat stupid to say he's the greatest of all time. Let's let his career play out. Let's let it finish up. And because it may change, he may win 2 or 3 more championships and you have more than Jordan. And if that's your whole thing you want to base it on is winning championships, then Bill Russell's the greatest of all time. It's not Jordan and it's not LeBron. Okay, it's in the eye of the beholder. But here's the thing. LeBron is whining about that, but he didn't care before. Now he cares and he worries about it, but yet he had an unfair advantage all this other time. And now you're talking about being unfair? Wah. You know what's also unfair? Anthony Davis leaving the Pelicans and coming to your team. You know what else isn't fair? Is when you leave Cleveland, that's not fair to Cleveland fans, and you join a super team with Bosch and Wade. That's not fair. And lots of things aren't fair. Kevin Durant leaving OKC to Golden State. Ask Thunder fans. You think that was fair? No, but it happened. So give me a break, LeBron. All right? Give me a break on that one. Mm-hmm. Give me a big, fat break on that one. Come on, man. Understand what's happening. And here's the other thing. What really would be cool, and the NBA may go to this at some point, and that's a great point that was brought up. We never got Kobe versus LeBron in a playoff series, did we?
No.
The only way you get LeBron and Steph Curry in a playoff series is the NBA Finals, correct? No. You're not going to the only way you could solve that, and I think it would be good for the NBA. I think the NBA should just seed it all the way through. You just forget the conferences. Seriously. You can have divisions. That's fine. And give a division winner like the NFL. You give them a playoff game. You get home court advantage, okay? You won your division. You might have a worse record. And I've said it before. Put a stipulation. You must have a winning record. And if you win your division, you get to host a first-round series. Now, exactly where you're seated, I don't know. But seed it and take the 16 or the 20 best teams. Forget about the conference affiliation. And if you did it that way, wouldn't it be something if the Lakers and LeBron would play, let's see what the standings here. Wouldn't it be something if LeBron played Trae Young and the Hawks in the first round of the NBA playoffs? Wouldn't that be kind of interesting? Wouldn't it be cool if Steph Curry went up against Jason Tatum in the semifinals? I mean, it would be fun because, as somebody pointed out, all the power was in the West all those years. We never got to see Kobe and LeBron except 2 games a year, and that was an interconference battle. But if you would have seeded it and rewarded the West for being better, Cleveland would have been a 6 seed instead of a 1 seed in the East. Some years, they would have been a 4, a 5, or a 6. And then you would have had more motivation to win more games, of course, instead of, you know, pulling it back because you're in the East and you clearly got the best record. And then you could have those more tasty matchups that cross over. You know, you could have Embiid of the Sixers going up against Doncic in the Mavericks in the first or second round. Whatever way you want to seed this thing by record. I don't have it in front of me, you know, seeding the 16, 18, or 20 teams. And it is an interesting point that this writer brought up, is that we talk about how Major League Baseball needs to adapt and they need to make the game more exciting, right? The NBA is doing fine. But you know what would help the NBA have even make it even more exciting is if the balance of power was spread in regards to the playoffs. Because what you have is the Western Conference playoffs. Everybody's talking about, oh, my goodness, Western Conference just loaded. Oh, those playoffs can be awesome. Nobody's talking about the Eastern Conference playoffs.
It's been a long time.
It's been a long time.
Anybody's really said, hey, the Eastern Conference playoffs are going to be really good.
Right, exactly.
I mean,
the star power is in the West, although Harden, Durant, Irving are all on one team. Embiid is with the Sixers. You got Giannis. But there's those stars, and then you got Tatum. But after that, all the other stars, I mean, the big-time stars, are in the West.
Yeah. I mean, listen, honestly, for me, as a basketball fan of what I've seen in my life, I think the last time I was excited for the Eastern Conference playoffs, like the playoffs as a whole, probably 1994 and 95, when Jordan was not playing for the Bulls. Because, the Knicks and Pacers series were fun.
They were.
And the Magic were coming up right with Shaq and Penny. And so that was fun in the East in those years. But ever since, when Jordan was there, you kind of knew. And I'm not saying the Bulls didn't have some fun series, right? Obviously, the Pacers series was fun when it went seven games. But, honestly, you can look at that stretch. The Bulls were coming up playing the Pistons, obviously, the 91, 92, 93. Those years, they were still trying to establish themselves and get to where they were.
Sure.
But it's like as a whole, Eastern Conference playoffs, I've not been real interested in them since – when the Bulls were playing in them, but as a whole, probably 1995. I honestly don't know because when I was in college, I just remember, like, nobody even cared about watching the Eastern Conference.
Well, ever since LeBron joined the league, and once he knocked out the Pistons that one year and scored 25 straight points, it was LeBron all the time. Whoever LeBron was playing for won the East, and there was nobody else.
They could be the one or two seed. It didn't matter. He knew who was going
to
be in the
Raptors,
finals.
Got to one a couple times, didn't matter, and then they finally cracked through when they got Kawhi Leonard on their team. Don't you think that'd be cool, though, if they seeded this whole thing?
Oh, yeah.
I don't have it in front of me, but I got the standings in front of me.
But, go back and look at it, too. Like, back in the late 80s, early 90s, it was the opposite, right?
Yes.
Like Bird couldn't play Magic until the finals, right?
Exactly.
Like, Magic couldn't play Jordan until
Isaiah
the finals.
Isaiah couldn't play Magic.
But they were playing – they were knocking each other around during the regular playoffs the whole time.
Right.
The Bulls, Pistons, Celtics, the Cavs had good teams back then. They didn't break through, but they had good teams.
Well, and Jordan stopped them a few times.
Yeah, and so, there were the Sixers had some good teams, and it was in the East back then, right?
It was kind of just the opposite of what we're dealing with right now.
It was
pretty much the Lakers and Rockets in the West.
Yeah, and so nobody could break through until, basically you'd have one team. When the Bulls were making it to the finals, it seemed like they played, except one time, they played a different team every year until they played the Jazz 2 years in a row, but... Jazz, it was late in Stockton and Malone's career when they finally broke through, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was. It was the East back then. Now it's the West. It would be great to see, 3, 4, 5 years wherever the power is just all together. And you can't do that. So how do you do that? Put them all in one bracket.
Well, just for fun, let me see if I can do this real quick. So here, you want to write these down? Here, get a pen and write these down real fast. We'll do this because our listeners are probably asking, well, what kind of matchups would you have? All right, so Utah would be the one right now. The 2 seed would be Phoenix. All right, you with me so far?
Yeah.
And then the 3 seed would be Philadelphia 76ers. The 4 seed would be, there's a 3-way tie. So let's just say the 4 seed is the Nuggets. The 5 seed is the Nets. The 6 seed is the Clippers. 7 seed is the Bucks. And the 8 seed... is the Lakers. The 9 seed is the Knicks. The 10 seed is the Mavericks. 11 seed is Atlanta. 12 seed Portland. 13 Miami. 14 Boston. 15 Golden State. And 16 Memphis. We'll just go with that, if they didn't have play-in tournaments. So 8 seeds. So who would play who? Tell me the matchups here. Because those are the top 16 records in the NBA, regardless of conference. So if we put them all together, our grand plan, and this has been talked about by the NBA quite a bit, they haven't had the guts to go through with it. What would our matchups be in the first round of the NBA playoffs, Dusty?
The Jazz Grizzlies.
The Jazz and the Grizzlies, okay.
Suns Warriors.
Ho, there, first boom, round. There's a fun one.
Yeah.
Even though they're in the same conference. All right, go ahead.
Sixers Celtics, a rivalry right off the
bat. Wow.
Nuggets Heat.
Nuggets Heat, that's an interconference situation.
Nets Blazers.
Nets Blazers, interconference.
Yeah, Clippers Hawks.
Clippers, Hawks, Trae Young against Kawhi Leonard, Paul George.
Yeah, Bucks, Mavericks.
Oh, Luka versus Giannis. Hello. Yeah.
And then you go old school Lakers, Knicks, you know.
Lakers, Knicks.
Yeah.
That'll be okay.
New York in first round, you know.
Yeah, I'd be all right. I'm okay with that. That's kind of interesting. Giannis versus Luka. That'd be fun. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Well, and there's obviously more potential for higher seeds getting upset as well.
Yeah. Well, okay, now go now take it the next round. Let's assume the top seeds all win. So the top 8 seeds. I think Lakers are 8, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so now tell me what the next round would be.
Jazz, Lakers.
Okay.
Suns, Bucks.
Suns, Bucks.
Yeah. Sixers, Clippers.
Ooh.
And then Nuggets, Nets.
Those are all intra-conference almost.
Yeah,
that'd be fun.
Yeah, except Lakers.
That'd be
Lakers,
fun.
Jazz.
Yeah, maybe they'll do it someday. Kind of fun to play with that. All right, yesterday we were talking about weird and odd injuries. We told you about the baseball pitcher for the A's, left-handed pitcher, that has a hairline fracture of his left pinky because he bumped it or, you know, probably obviously got mad, slammed the table playing video games with his controller, whatever the case may be. So I decided to pull up some weird injuries in sports. Off the field, mainly, is the ones I wanted to focus on. All right, you ready for this one? Some of these I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Ken Griffey Jr. missed games throughout his career for a variety of bizarre reasons, including once when his protective cup pinched something that's very important to him. Us men have two of them. It pinched one of them. Major League Baseball player Glenn Allen Hill missed several games with cuts to his hands and body that he suffered when he fell out of bed and crashed into glass. The cause of the fall, according to Hill, he had a nightmare about being attacked by monster spiders.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that story. Roger Craig, he baseball legend, not the football player of the Niners. I was thinking that, but he was a manager.
Old school San Francisco or New York Giant, wasn't he? Something like that.
He was a baseball legend. He was the manager of the San Francisco Giants. He played in the league as well.
Managed the Giants. Okay.
Yeah, I remember that. He showed up for a game in the early 1990s with an injured hand. One he said he cut while fiddling with a bra strap. Cal Ripken Jr. busted his nose after he was accidentally hit in the face by teammate Roberto Hernandez as the White Sox were taking their team photos. Ripken never missed a game and played with a broken nose. Nolan Ryan was easily one of the best baseball players ever, but that does not make him immune for freak injuries. In 1985, Ryan was bit after sticking his hand into a dog enclosure containing 3 coyotes. Glenn Healy, the goalie for the Toronto Maple Leafs, suffered a serious cut to his hand while cleaning bagpipes and required 10 stitches. John Smoltz suffered a severe burn to his chest, although exactly how it happened is unclear. Legend has it that he was running late and opted to iron his shirt on his body, burning himself in the process. He denied the story later.
I probably would, too.
I would, too. No doubt. San Diego Padres pitcher Adam Eaton had a strange encounter. That's not right. They got Adam Eaton outfielder for the White Sox, and they say pitcher of the Padres. He wasn't a pitcher.
Definitely not.
So Adam Eaton had a strange encounter with a cellophane wrapping on a DVD back in 2001. Unfortunately for Eaton, he stabbed himself in the stomach with a paring knife while he was trying to open up the wrapping. remember Kevin Mitchell, who was an outstanding baseball player 1 year at 47 homers? He missed some time after straining his back vomiting. But that was nothing compared to when he was sidelined after injuring his mouth due to his attempt to eat a donut that he had just microwaved and was way too hot for consumption. These are real injuries, folks. Randy Orton, WWE wrestler, multiple world champion, suffered a dislocated shoulder while taking out the garbage. Lionel Simmons developed tendonitis due to long sessions on his Nintendo, even missed games so he could recover from that. For boys and girls, Nintendo will... Never mind, forget it. Larry Walker separated his shoulder fishing in Canada. I don't know how that happened. Here's a good one. Brett Barbary rubbed his eye. He was a second baseman. He rubbed his eye while he had chili juice on his fingers.
Yeah, Moises, that's not a good idea.
No, that's never a good idea. Moises Alou suffered a torn ACL when he fell off a treadmill while training at his home. Carlos Gonzalez, who was a great player for the Rockies for a while, had to leave a game early against the Marlins because he accidentally swallowed his chewing tobacco. He felt dizzy and dehydrated and had to leave the game. I love that one.
Who was that again?
That was Carlos Gonzalez, Cargo for the Rockies. He accidentally swallowed his chew and had to leave because he felt dizzy and dehydrated. That's good. David Seaman is a professional soccer player. He injured his knee while reaching for the TV remote.
Of course, Michael Jordan, you remember his one? He lacerated his finger with a cigar cutter while vacationing in Bahamas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and affected his golf game as well. Let's see here. What else we got? There's a soccer player that had surgery on his toe after he accidentally stepped on a broken teacup that he dropped. Remember Geno Smith? Remember he got in that fight in training camp and so forth and broken jaw and so and that required surgery? It was all over $600 that Smith owed another player. Jimmy Johnson missed 4 weeks of racing in the NASCAR Cup while recovering from a wrist injury. Apparently, he fell from a moving golf cart and thus hurt his wrist. I forgot that one.
Yeah, I didn't hear that.
Jason Pierre-Paul, who was a big part of the Buccaneers, yeah. Blew off a few fingers with firecrackers.
Yeah.
Let's see. What do we got here? Yeah, those are a lot of them right there. Those are quite a few of them. I'm trying to see if there's another one here. Oh, here we go. I'll end with this one for Dusty because it's a Spurs story. Matt Bonner, remember him?
Oh, yeah.
He went through
the
a rough...
Red Rocket.
Yeah, Red Rocket. Matt Bonner went through a rough stretch of games in 2015 while playing for the Spurs. He blamed his poor shooting on a severe case of tennis elbow, which made taking shots extremely painful. The root cause of his tennis elbow? His new iPhone. He explained, everybody's going to find this hilarious. When the new iPhone came out, it was way bigger than the last one, and I think because I got that new phone, it was a strain to use it. You have to stretch further to hit the buttons, and I honestly think that's how I ended up developing...
I remember
the tennis elbow. Those are pretty doggone good. Those are really good. And there's others as well that I didn't even get to. So there's some weird injuries that have taken place in sports. And I remember Kevin Apier of the Royals falling down his stairs in his own house and injuring his back. And he had to, I think it started the season. He was going to be the opening day starter that particular year, if I remember correctly. And
yeah. He
was out and on the disabled list. Now they call it the injured list. So... interesting stuff with injuries. Carlos Boozer tripped over his gym bag and broke his arm, according to Cody.
Okay. I think I remember hearing
that,
too.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
You know, Salvi was carrying luggage and got hurt a few years ago. There's some interesting stories of sports injuries, weird injuries, so forth and so on. Here's one for you. Nate Burleson was driving at 2:30 in the morning in 2013. He's on CBS with the NFL Today. Mm-hmm. He reacted quickly to save a sliding pizza box from falling off the passenger seat. That's when he lost control of his vehicle, crashed in the median, broke his arm, and missed 8 weeks of action, all trying to catch a sliding pizza on the passenger
side. Save
the pizza. Yeah. How about this one? Be honest, ladies and gentlemen. Have you ever walked into a door or a glass door that's just super clean and didn't realize it was the door, and you went blink, and you looked around? Not that I ever did it. And you looked around, like, did anybody see me do that? Well... at spring training ahead of the 2008 season, Hunter Pence was in a hot tub with a friend. When he went inside to use the bathroom, he didn't see a glass door. He walked right through it, incurring lacerations that sidelined him for a week.
Man.
Remember Kendrys Morales celebrating a game-winning homer and then ripped up his leg in the celebration?
Yeah.
Orlando Brown, not the current Orlando Brown of the Chiefs. Remember him getting hit in the eye by that Jeff Triplett penalty flag? Ruined his career.
That was his dad, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was right. That is his dad. That's right.
Yeah.
Sammy Sosa. Was forced to head to the disabled list because he sneezed so hard he sprained a ligament in his back. And then, of course, one of the best ones was when Gus Frerotte celebrated a touchdown by headbutting
the wall.
That was good stuff.
Oh, my goodness.
And remember Bill Gramatica?
Oh, yeah.
When he was jumping, celebrating a game-winning field goal and tore his ACL jumping up and down in the process.
Yeah, Bill and Martine would jump on every kick they made, like extra points, field goals, whatever it was.
Yeah.
It was just an Argentinian thing that they did. Like
right.
They were scoring a goal in soccer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that backfired on Bill. And I don't think it ever hit Martine that way, but I think he might have stopped after Bill broke his or tore his
I think he did,
ACL.
Actually, yeah. I don't know. What's the best one of that whole group? I think the best one is you swallowing your chewing tobacco and you feel dizzy and dehydrated.
Yeah.
That's hilarious
to me.
That's
rough.
That's hilarious.
Saving the pizza.
That's a good one.
I can relate to.
Yeah. Walking through a glass door. I've run into a clear door before once. I'm not going to lie.
That's why I don't clean
windows at my house. That's why. So I don't run into.
You think about how many times you're driving down the road, right, and something you got over there slips. Like it's a pizza or you got a drink
in
your cup holder and it slips off. You react.
Sure.
And you're like, I don't want that all over my car.
Right.
Also, I want to eat that pizza later.
Right.
And so it's like, or I want to drink that soda later. And it's like, or pop, or whatever you call it. But, and so it's like, I got to save that. And then all of a sudden you're like veering off the road. Like, oh, was it really that important? I don't think it probably was.
No. That could happen to about anybody, to be honest with you.
So those are some of the weirdest injuries in sports on and off the field. Thought you would enjoy that. So if you think you're having a bad day, just remember all those guys. Although they all made good enough money to recuperate from their injuries for the most part. Although the Gus, I remember the Gus Frerotte one. It's like, what were you thinking?
What are you doing, man?
I mean, there was a little padding there, but there wasn't a lot. And he messed up his neck because he headbutted it so hard. It's like, wow. I'm still waiting, and I'm sure it's happened before, where guys headbutt each other in NFL and just, like, get knocked out with a concussion, just drop them immediately. I mean, that's kind of funny, but not funny type of thing, you know?
Well, you've seen, like, people do headbutts without their helmet
yeah,
on.
Oh, yeah, they do that sometimes.
What are you doing?
I'm waiting for the old side bump where the players, you know, celebrate and they jump high. College basketball does it a lot. We jump high and do a side bump. I'm just waiting for a guy to come down and rip up his leg, just like, you know, Kendrick Morales.
You can do the same thing on that, right? Come in the wrong way,
yes,
bump heads together and get a concussion or
something. That could happen. Yeah. Or your tear your ACL like Gramatica. I mean, they're jump up and down to celebrate Bill Gramatica on the game-winning kick, as we talked about. That could easily happen when you're doing a big high jump side bump as for an athlete.
Yeah.
You know, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant go to the big, huge side bump, and one of them comes down and turns the ankle or tears the ACL. I mean, it could happen. I wish it on anybody.
I bet it has happened at
probably
levels
has.
We don't hear about.
Somebody didn't admit to it, though. That's probably what happened. All right, enjoy your day, everyone.
Punch your ticket to local sports talk with the Sports Ticket Podcast. Now available via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.